You know, for as long as I can remember, people have been asking me what I want to be when I get older. I guess technically I'm older now, but what's the next step? If you're entering that transition phase in your life, graduating college, going to grad school, or even just moving to a new city, we've got something for you.
All right, welcome to the brand new show, Transitions. I'm John Mim, and this is my co-host, Callie McCurdy. Together, we'll guide you from show to show and introduce you to Philadelphia's most inspiring entrepreneurs, musicians, comedians, and more.
There's nothing better than experience itself, and we'll be featuring guests on Transitions that are, to be honest, walking in shoes not so different from yours. Now that you've got a feel for the show, meet the rest of the folks behind Transitions.
All right, so here we are at 801 North Bethlehem Pike. Forgot where I was for a second. In North Wales, PA, in our studio.
Well, anyway, welcome to the March 31st edition of Transitions. I swear to God, this is Transitions. This is not a new show, and they were canceled. Yes. I'm Dan Schmidt, in for John Mim.
And I'm Janine Gibbons, in for Callie McCurdy.
And we are at Borders, as you just heard.
It's raining, but, you know, in here, it's a party, as always. Tonight, we have some very cool people on the show. For my arts and entertainment segment, I will be having a returning guest to Transitions, Patrick McGowan. Let's give it up for Pat. And then I'll tell you why we're giving it up for him.
We're going to be breaking down the entire Phillies season, discussing all the problems that they may have or answers that they have to those problems. We also have, in honor of it being April Fool's Day tomorrow, we're going to be talking about pranks. This could be April Fool's pranks. They could be high school pranks. They could be college pranks. You don't want to miss it.
Exactly. Stay tuned for that. I'm pretty excited to talk about all the pranks that have been played on me. I haven't played that many, surprisingly, but maybe this will give me inspiration, you know? I know that D-Tech has some good stuff for us, so I'm pretty pumped. And also, for our main segment tonight, we are going to be talking about something that has been in the news a lot recently, Walmart, and all the sex discrimination cases that are going on. And will it go to the Supreme Court? Won't it? We'll just have to see. So, Dan, where can our friendly transitioners catch the show?
Other than Borders. Well, we have the internet.
Just that little thing called the internet.
It's popular now.
Love it.
www.transitionsradio.com for the website. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/transitionsradio. And we also have Twitter. Yeah.
Which is...
I'm really still trying to figure out what it is. But we have Twitter at transitionsr. And you can follow us.
Yes, you can follow us, friend us, like us, the works, and...
Not really follow us, because that'll be creepy, I'll call the cops.
No, you can't stalk
you
us.
You can, like, internet stalk us.
Yeah,
that's
perfectly
cool.
Fine.
Because that's what Facebook's for, right? That's stalking people.
It. Well...
Am I doing it wrong?
No, you're doing it right, okay, I have
cool.
to say. And also, if you want to catch this show again, you can listen to us every Friday on 89.1 WYBF FM, The Burn, in Radnor, Pennsylvania. That's burning. That's fire. I like it. So make sure to check us out at all of those places and get your lowdown on Transitions. So let's just do it. Let's just get started. I'm pretty pumped, pretty mellow tonight because I did have caffeinated soda, but it wasn't Dr. Pepper. So with that being said, let's bring on our first guest of the evening, Patrick McGowan.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
I just won't go away.
No, you really won't. No, that's okay. I mean, I invited you, so it's fine. I guess that's what I get, you know, for inviting you. Patrick McGowan is a Cabrini alumni, 2009 Cabrini alumni, and he's been on the show several times to talk about his horror production company, Grimm's World. But tonight he's here to talk about a new movie that he is working on that is a sequel to a college film that he made called Requiem. So, Pat, I know that in order to do this film, you had to do a lot of fundraising. So could you talk about the process of that and why, like, what you're going to do with the donations you get? I know you were using Kickstarter.com.
Yes, well, this film is more of a prequel for it. The college film that we made, we decided to use Kickstarter to raise our budget after we decided how much it was going to cost us to make. With Kickstarter, you set maximum of 3 months to do your fundraising. You can go as little as one day if you wanted to, but I don't suggest that. So we set it for 3 months, and the deal is if you have to get your minimum amount by the end of that 3 months, or you get nothing, zilch, zero, however you want to say it. Even if you were $1 short, you get nothing. So you need all that money. The good news is even if you reach your minimum stated budget by before those 3 months are done, you'll still get the rest of those 3 months to raise even more money.
That's so good.
So you could end up with a lot more money than what you set out to get, which is the good thing about Kickstarter.
So where do you advertise Kickstarter? Like, how are you getting people to donate? Are you going through Facebook like we were just talking about and having people stalk you somehow creatively? Or what's your means of advertising?
Well, pretty much it's me and a friend of another Cabrini alumni, Delta Benoit, who are working on this. And we've basically decided to social network our butts off of the things, such as Facebook and Twitter. I'm also trying to get into contact with a couple other of my friends, some Cabrini alumni, some not, and letting them know and seeing if they could help us spread the word, either through word of mouth in general or by doing what we're doing.
And what's your kind of plug, your pitch? Like, why do you want to make this film?
Because it's, for me, making this film is more along, because being a filmmaker, it's kind of, this is one of the films that I've been wanting to put out there and make. It's something we made in college, and now we want to put it out for general consumption of everyone, now that we've learned a few more tricks of video.
And one last question about the fundraising, and then we'll move on. What specifically are you going to buy with the money that you raise?
Well, pretty much our stated budget, which is $31,500.
Wow. Yeah, that's a big budget.
Surprisingly, it's a small budget compared to some films.
Yeah, I guess so.
But pretty much with that money, we're going to rent cameras, not HD for the minimum budget, because we don't think we really need them. If we were to get the extra money, we would probably think about HD. We're also renting mics, lights, and other part of the money we're getting is going to go to props, such as teeth for our vampires, of course, which you will probably remember from the college production.
I played a vampire. I died in the first one, though, conveniently.
Such a shame.
Whatever.
You might be coming back for the trilogy,
good.
Though.
So oh, good. Look forward to that one. You know, trying to
look forward to
Janine
being in our films.
Yay! Word. That's anyway, awesome.
And the rest of the budget will be going towards the post-editing, post-production, putting in, with me, pretty much, getting a Mac and editing this film on Final Cut Pro.
Okay, so my next question and topic that I wanted to talk to you about was a mini-documentary that you said you're doing along with the film. What's that all going to entail?
Well, pretty much the mini-documentary we're putting together to advertise our film towards people who we want to donate. Pretty much a mini-documentary, it's me pretty much saying what the inspiration for this is, why I'm working on this project, all sorts of little bits and pieces. And I'm hoping to take the college version of what we made and put in clips of that so people can see where we're coming from. And then as well, I'm hoping to put, we're actually filming this episode of Transitions. I guess I can call it an episode.
Edition, episode,
something like that. We're filming this one, so I'm going to also take bits and clips out of this as well and throw that into the mini documentary as well.
Awesome. So we are stars somewhere else as well. All right. So I don't think I can wait any longer to ask this question. You know, what is, give us a brief synopsis about what Requiem entail. Like, what's it about?
Well, Requiem Beginnings is pretty much what it says on the tin. It's the beginning of a trilogy that's going to center around three vampire hunters who are hunting the monsters that ruined their lives.
Cool. That was a good brief synopsis. And why did you decide to take on the same concept and expand upon it now?
Well, pretty much we had so much fun working on the first one, and it's something that with the first one, we had such a backstory set up for it when we first made it, mm-hmm. but we never really went with it during the actual filming. So we kind of wanted to work on it more to expand it a little bit. And it kind of grew into this now we're making an actual film going with the backstory of the original story, telling that, and then we're going to tell two more stories with it. The original is going to get its own remake as the second film of this trilogy. And then we have a third one, which will wrap up the loose ends we left in the original as well.
Wow. Well, you got a good plan. You kind of are reminding me of a George Lucas right now, like a protege of George Lucas with the trilogy. Well, not trilogy, but, you know, the same idea. It sounds epic. So my last question is, are the same people going to be involved, which we briefly touched on earlier, but like as far as cast and crew goes?
Well, right now, a lot of the people who worked on the original are being brought in. Delta Benoit, as I mentioned before, she wrote the script actually for this one. She's been mainly the driving force behind it. She was also a part of the original production. Mm-hmm. She was one of the Free Hunters as well. And we're speaking of the people who played mm-hmm. Free Hunters. The other two are also going to be, we're hoping to bring in.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do a little casting, but right now there are who mm-hmm. we're thinking of right now for those parts.
Cool. So you're keeping the lead people in their roles. Well, that's good because fans can always look forward to that and familiar faces. Well, I want to thank you for being on Transitions again and keeping us in the loop. And just real quick, where can people go to donate to fundraising for this awesome film?
Well, they can go to Kickstarter and look for Requiem Beginnings because that's what we put it under. Or you can also look under my name, Patrick McGowan.
Mm-hmm.
We could also put a link up on your site for it if people just want to go directly to it.
Transitionsradio.com.
Indeed.
You heard it here. Awesome. Well, thank you again for choosing us. And please do keep us updated on all your efforts. Let us know if you do reach that 3-month mark and if you get extra. Share
that
the wealth.
Would be awesome. Please donate money. Yay. If you don't have money, get friends who have money. Get them to donate.
You heard it. I'm Jeanne Gibbons, your arts and entertainment contributor. Kill the lights. Back to you, Dan.
That was dramatic.
All right, thanks for that, Jeanne, and especially thank you for letting me know that I'm actually on camera right now. But anyway, we are going to get into our Phillies breakdown here. D-Tech is joining me over on the mic there.
Interim coach for
Interim
Bennett.
Interim coach, filling in. Coach is out with, Coach is out.
Just
you got the assistant
simple.
Coach filling in, and I know he can do the job. That's why I hired him.
I try.
All right. Well, Philly's last season ended very disappointingly. I know pretty much everyone that I've talked to was expecting them to win the World Series. They were the clear favorites. Vegas made them the favorites. They were the better team than the Giants. But it didn't work out. Giants got the clutch hits. Phillies did not. Phillies actually outscored the Giants in that series, 20 runs to 19, but lost in 6 games and went into the offseason. They lost Jason Worth. They gained Cliff Lee in one of the most shocking signings in the history of sports, Cliff Lee leaving $30 million on the table to give the finger to New York.
And he didn't give the finger. He just wanted to be a Philly.
Oh, he gave the finger.
Yeah, there's a lot of rumors going around about that.
He spat in Steinbrenner's face.
Yeah, I would too.
Or grave. All right, but still, not all is great in Phillies land. Chase Utley is yet to step on the diamond this year, has a very serious knee injury. He's starting the season on the disabled list, as is Brad Lidge, who's going to be out at least 6 weeks with shoulder issues. So let's get right into the season. Phillies, again, predicted to get to the World Series. I think Boston is the favorite in Vegas to win the World Series. Phillies are heavy favorites to get back there, win their fifth straight division. So let's get into the Phillies and what they need to do to catch that fifth division crown. Last year, Ryan Howard, his power numbers were down a little bit, 31 home runs, 108 RBIs. Can Ryan Howard bounce back to his normal power numbers despite not having Jason Worth hitting behind him or Chase Utley hitting in front of him? What do you think?
When people say his power numbers are down, people have to realize that Ryan Howard, his numbers were fine until he got injured. And when you get a sprain like that, I remember watching it. I screamed, his foot's broken, because the way it bent over and under itself, hitting second base. So he clipped his toe, and his
nasty looking.
His foot went forward and then rolled to the side. So that's not an easy injury to come over. I mean, I get a sprained ankle and I'm like, oh, walking's difficult. I couldn't imagine coming back 4 weeks later and, you know, trying to run and do base paths and stuff and put weight on it and be a slugger. So up until that injury, his numbers were right on track. So I think if he just kind of comes at this season, you know, nothing needs to change. Nothing was really bad. You know, I think he's going to rebound fine, and I think everyone's going to be blown away by going, oh my God, last year was – look how much better he is this year. You got to remember, he was out 4 weeks, and then, you know, he's not 100%. He said he still wasn't 100% when the season was over.
No, you can tell, you know, throughout the season he was having real trouble pushing off that foot. And for a power hitter like him, you know, he needs to use – he's not just swinging with his hands and getting that ball out. He needs – you know, it has to start from the bottoms of his feet and work his way up. He's got to torque his whole body. And you can just tell that he wasn't right the entire rest of the year. But in addition to that...
Who needs feet to hit home runs?
Yes, exactly. Now, you know, 31 home runs, 108 RBIs. That's low for his standards. Not for Major League standards. And if you look across the board, last year in baseball, one guy hit 50 home runs. I think two more guys got over 40. Pujols and Joey Votto. I mean, power numbers were down all over the place. Like, it was the year of the pitcher. They called it the year of the pitcher. Everyone's power numbers were down. What we're seeing now, I think, in baseball is a shift back towards the pitching side because you've got the steroids taken out of the game. They're testing for that now. You got the amphetamines taken out of the game where guys on, you know, an 8-game road trip, you know, they would pop a couple Adderall maybe or something like that. Yeah, to keep themselves going.
Yep.
All that's taken out of the game now. So what you're seeing is, you know, a decrease in the power numbers because these guys aren't, you know, popping these things out like they're tennis balls. So I think that's one of the reasons why Ryan Howard's power, not that I'm saying Ryan Howard ever did anything like that, but pitchers now are the dominant force in the game.
As it should be.
As it should be, and as it usually winds up being in the playoffs anyway. So can Ryan Howard get back to his normal power numbers? I think he can if he's more selective. One thing I noticed about Howard last year was that I felt like he put too much on himself. With Utley being down, with Wirth not having the production with the runners in scoring position, you would see Howard chasing balls down in the dirt, chasing balls up around his eyeballs. He's got to learn that sometimes they're just not going to pitch to you, dude, and you need to sit there, take those four balls, get on down to first base, and have the next guy after you do it.
Yeah, but taking $125 million over 5 years kind of
makes you want to swing the bat.
Makes you want to
swing
the bat.
So that's his dilemma. That's his dilemma. But, you know, he's another year older, another year more mature. Understands, you know, what pitchers are trying to do to him now, hopefully, and hopefully he can correct that. But, you know, Chase Utley being out doesn't just affect Ryan Howard. It affects the entire infield. How do you think the Phillies are going to compensate without arguably their best player?
I think Wilson Valdez is going to step up real, real nice. He was a good utility player last year. He had a career high of 111 games, and, you know, he did phenomenal for filling in for both J-Roll and Chase Utley, you know, when he got his hand surgery. So I think Wilson Valdez is going to be that perfect fit. Polanco's back. Excuse me. J-Roll's finally healthy again. So I think I think Valdez is just going to fill in fine is what it basically boils down to. Well, Valdez is a good utility, and that's exactly what he's going to be used for, and he's going to be good at it because he's a good utility player.
But at the same time, I don't think Wilson Valdez is a 162-game solution. I think if Wilson Valdez is your everyday second baseman after the All-Star break, there's going to be some problems. I mean, the guy is a career minor leaguer, and it's not like everyone just missed his talents, and all of a sudden the Phillies found this diamond in the rough. It's like you're in the minor leagues for a reason. I mean, here's a guy, he's not good with the bat. Let's not even try to sugarcoat what he is, you know, to make him more than what he is. Very good defensively. Possibly even better than Utley defensively, especially with Utley's knee issues coming back. I would argue that Valdez is going to have better range than Utley for the rest of both of their careers. But with the bat, I mean, you are losing a lot of runs.
You're losing a lot of runs for Utley. You know, we're talking about it's the year of the pitcher. It's the era of the pitcher. You know, defense is going to win you games. You don't need that power. You don't need all of that, you know, juice, all that muscle behind you when you got, you know, pitchers throwing 8-9 innings where it's a 1-2, 2-1, you know, kind of game, 3-4, even, you know, getting up there, 5-6. There's going to be a lot of one-run games. And Valdez really, all he needs to do is just kind of get on base. He's fast enough to steal. He's like Victorino and Rollins, you know. Just let the bottom of the lineup, the guys who have the real power who are still in this lineup, you know, let them do the work. He just needs to get on base.
And now speaking of defense, we got Jimmy Rollins entering a contract year. Jimmy Rollins, one of the best shortstops in the game defensively. Offensively, though, has taken a hit these past couple years. Do you think he can get back to his numbers?
Back to his 2007 MVP?
I don't think we're ever going to see a repeat of the 2007.
No, we're never going to see a repeat for that.
And to be honest with you, I think one of the worst things that ever happened to Jimmy Rollins as an overall player was him hitting 30 home runs that year, because now he thinks that that's something he can do all the time, when in reality, that was just a career year for him, and he's never touched 30 since. He's gotten over 20, but he's never come close to 30 since. And I think Jimmy Rollins weighs less than I do, and he's swinging with such a huge uppercut. When a player like him, especially, you know, getting a little bit slower, getting a little bit, you know, not as quick with the bat, I mean, he's got to start smacking the ball around on the ground. I'm not saying he needs to start bunting for base hits and things like that, because it's just not the player he is. And you're not going to teach an old dog new tricks at this age. But what I'm saying is Jimmy Rollins needs to work more on just getting on base as opposed to trying to be a hero, even when there's nobody on base.
I think one of the best things that's going to happen to J-Roll this year is he's going to be further down in the lineup. I think with him being first, he's got that instinct that he's got to hit the ball, and he's got to hit it, and he's got to get that guaranteed single. He's got to get that guaranteed single. Now with him hitting third, he doesn't have to get that guaranteed single. He has to get the guy over, or he could get the single, or he could go for power. So, I mean, kind of whatever the pitcher throws at him, he has an option to do it. You know, he doesn't even have to swing. He could get a walk, and Ryan Howard comes up, and boom, his job is done. His job is getting on base, and I think with him batting lower in the order, he won't have that pressure of, you know, swing hard and hope. You know what I mean? So I think batting third will be a definite pro for him. And I think, you know, his numbers will come up because they're going to want to get him out. So they're going to throw, you know, probably more fastballs at him so that they don't have to pitch to Howard.
One of the most ridiculous stats I saw last year about Jimmy Rollins: with nobody on base, he was hitting under 250 from the leadoff spot. With runners in scoring position, he is over 300 with a 400 on-base percentage, more walks than strikeouts. I really don't understand why Jimmy Rollins seems to be fighting himself at the top of the lineup when it looks like when he's batting further down the lineup that he's more comfortable and a productive player. So that remains to be seen this season. All right, well, let's move on to right field, another position where the Phillies underwent a big change. All-star Jason Wirth gone, went for greener pasture, well, greener in money-wise.
Literally not greener.
Not greener as in being a better team-wise. But Ben Francisco is now the new replacement in right field. Is he the best option?
Until Dominic Brown comes back, and if Ben Francisco can keep up the production that he's had in spring training, yes. He's had a ridiculous spring. He's the number one hitter, number one on-base percentage in spring training.
Most homers.
But yeah, he's leading a lot of the offensive stats. So if he can continue to have that, I think he's going to be the permanent right fielder, and Dominic Brown's going to be a utility.
Here's what I think. I think that Ben Francisco is going to play not at an all-star level, but play well enough to win that job so that Dominic Brown does not even become a utility player. Dominic Brown has the entire season to correct his swing at AAA and come back next year and fight for a spot, not in right field with Francisco, but in left field, because Ibanez's money will be off the books. Ibanez is a free agent next year. He'll be gone. They're not bringing back a 39-year-old outfielder.
Nope. So
I think Dominic Brown is not going to see much action on the Phillies roster this year, even if he returns quickly from his injury, because I really think Ben Francisco is going to win this job outright. All right, let's move on to pitching, where there's a lot fewer question marks than there is on offense.
But it's a whole lot of exclamation points.
A whole lot of exclamation points. But one question mark about the starting rotation is that three of these four aces are on the wrong side of 30. In fact, three of the four are 32 or older. Can we realistically expect a rotation made up of guys in that age range to stay healthy for 162 games?
Oh, I think the thing that they have going for them is that they're all older, they're all veterans, and they know their body well enough, barring like the freak injury of, you know, getting a line drive up the back or whatever, or spraining an ankle that happens to everyone. I think these guys know their body well enough that they know where they can push it and then they know where they can stop. I remember Halladay getting a tweaked groin and Charlie Manuel asking him, you know, when will you be ready? And he goes, 5 days, you know. So these guys know their body well enough to know not to push it. And
Halladay pulled his groin in the first inning of the Giants game 5, and he was ready by the second inning.
Yeah. So these guys know what to do well enough in order to continue pitching. These guys don't want to pitch three or four games and then sit out. I mean, these guys are going to go out and they're going to do what they have to do. They're players. They're getting paid millions of dollars and they all want rings. So these guys are going to do what it takes. And it doesn't matter that they're all over, you know, 4 out of 5 or 32 plus. These guys are professional athletes and they trained and they're ready to go.
I think it's funny that the youngest one of the group, well, Blanton has a ring too, but the youngest of the four aces is the only guy with a ring. But if you read anything about these guys, they are insane. Halliday gets to the ballpark at 4 o'clock in the morning to start working out. Oswalt's workout, off-season workout strategy is modeled off of that of Navy SEALs. Cliff Lee just makes everything so effortlessly, and he's never really had a history of arm problems, you know, since he got it all together at age 29. I'm really not worried about these guys, despite the fact that they are getting up there in age, just because these are three of the biggest freaks in all of Major League Baseball when it comes to staying healthy and just being ridiculous with their workouts. So I'm not worried about the starting rotation at all. I don't think anyone should be. That is the strength of the team, and if you are going to pick a strength for your baseball team to have, you want it to be starting pitching more than any other aspect.
Yep.
So let's move to the back end of the pitching, the bullpen. We've got 39-year-old Jose Contreras closing games because Woo-hoo! Brad Lidge is on the disabled list. Can he do that?
Yeah, he did phenomenal last year when Brad Lidge was getting all kind of like wishy-washy. So I think Contreras kind of just picking up the ball where he left off, and he's not the only closer they have. They can use JC. They can use Madsen in certain situations where he's not being used up as a setup. You know, they have Baez, who's been kind of in spring training, but, you know, it doesn't matter about spring training. What matters is when you pull together for the season.
Well, let's go in a little more in depth with Brad Lidge. We've had Brad Lidge for 4 years now, and this is the fourth year that there have been injury problems. And we've seen a decline in the fastball velocity. In 2008, he had his perfect season. He was throwing between 94 and 96, you know? 2009, awful season. Was down to 94, 92. Last year, bounce back year. Still got hurt, but had a bounce back year. Really shut things down in the second half. Was only getting that fastball up to 92. This spring, he's only hitting the high 80s. Can we expect anything out of Brad Lidge?
I don't know if we can expect. I mean,
don't think you can. And here's what I think is going to happen. Here's
okay,
why
tell
I
me.
Think Jose Contreras is the closer. Because if Brad Lidge comes back, it's a lot easier to pluck Jose Contreras out of the ninth inning and put him back to the seventh inning, as opposed to having Madsen do the eighth and then the ninth and then back to the eighth and then back to the ninth. But what I think you're going to see happen is when 6 weeks rolls around and Brad Lidge still is experiencing shoulder pain and he's going to need to get that rotator cuff operated on, I think you're going to see then Ryan Madsen get put into the permanent closer's role, and you're going to see Ryan Madsen finally become the closer that he's always had the stuff to be. And Ryan Madsen is going to get re-signed after this year to be the new closer.
Yes.
You heard it here. All right, let's get
to Dan Schmidt first.
Let's get to some predictions here. Games played for Chase Utley this season, how many?
Over under? I'll
do a number.
60.
I'll go a little more. I'm going to say 70. We're not going to see him until the All-Star break at the earliest.
At the absolute earliest.
I think if they can get him 70 games, he can have enough time to get his swing ready for the playoffs. And to be honest, this team don't need Utley to get to the playoffs, but they probably need him to win the World Series. All right, home runs for Ryan Howard.
Over under again? I'll do 35 and a half.
I think I'm going to go 40. I think he gets back to 40 this year. I think he's going to learn to be a more patient hitter and hit his pitch as opposed to going fishing like he had in the past year. I'm going to say 40. I think he gets to 40.
Okay.
RBIs for Ben Francisco.
105.
That's a little high for me. I don't think thrusting a guy into a full-time starting job for the first time is going to get that kind of results, especially if they're going to hit him sixth. I'm going to go with 80. I think 80 is a nice number for Ben Francisco to have as a six-hole hitter. I think that's enough times where he's picking up where Ryan Howard and Raul Ibanez don't get the job done. I think 80 RBIs would be a good season for Ben Francisco. Which starting pitcher is going to have the most wins?
Halliday. Don't even have to think.
All right, I'm going to go outside the box here, and I'm going to say Cole Hamels, and here's why.
Really?
Cole Hamels got so unlucky last year with wins. Things are bound to change, and if you want a more statistical approach, Cole Hamels is the number four starter on this team. He is not a number four starter on any other team in the league. He's going to be going up against other teams' number four starters, which in the most part is slop. is garbage. Most teams' number four starters is a guy that they're just hoping goes out there and pitches six innings. Well, Cole Hamels is a guy that we go out there, and we're thinking he's going to pitch nine. So I'm going to say Cole Hamels wins the most games because he's going to be going up against the weakest competition.
Exactly why Joey B is going to have a bounce back year.
I think so, too. All right. Final record, and what are they going to do in the playoffs?
I hope they win it. I'm going to say they go 99, just short of that 100.
Just to make us mad that they didn't get there.
Just to make us mad that they didn't get the C note.
All right, I'm going to go with 95 because I just don't think with all the injuries that they're getting hit with in the lineup that this team's going to be able to score enough runs to get the four aces a win every single time out. But that pitching staff alone is enough to get you 90 wins. And I think that the Phillies have enough on offense and enough in the bullpen to hold it down and win the division, get 95 wins. And once they get into the playoffs, I think that's when this team will become its most dangerous.
Cliff Lee is going to destroy
people. You're not
people.
Going to beat this team in a seven-game series. So I'm predicting right here on March 31st, the Philadelphia Phillies are going to win the World Series. Give it up! Wearing my Cliff Lee jersey. I'm a Jersey guy. Not from New Jersey, thank God, but, you know, I wear my jerseys.
All right, well, it's been fun. So
I'm Derek for filling in for the coach.
I'm signing off.
Did a heck of a job. Janine, back to you.
Okay, so thank you, Dan, for that coverage and predictions of what is to come on this season for the Phillies. I have to say, being someone who doesn't know a lot about sports besides, you know, viewing it and hearing it through my dad watching the game because he talks to the TV like they can hear him, I really have learned a lot from Dan's segment, and tonight was really good. So
I will be there at the ballpark tomorrow, so if Jimmy Rollins' line for autographs is too long, just come on over to Section 305.
Janine, they can hear you through the TV. I just want to let you know, since you don't know that much about sports, they can actually hear you.
I see. That's how it works. I was wondering about that. Thanks, Derek. Thanks for clearing that up.
That's why I'm here.
But, yeah, so, well, and so look forward to that. Dan will be at the game tomorrow, Section 305?
I think.
All right, so let's...
Main segment.
Yes, let's move on to... Let's transition to our main segment of the evening. We are talking about the big corporation known as Walmart, and it's been in the news a lot recently. There is a lot of cases coming forward of women saying that they are not, of employees of Walmart saying that they are not getting the same opportunities for management positions and promotions. And
women are allowed to have jobs?
Are we really starting off on that note, Dan?
Can of worms.
next thing you know, they'll be allowed to vote.
Actually,
oh my God.
We've enjoyed that right for quite some time, and
I like
don't
to stir the drink a little bit.
Well, you know, I don't understand. Well, we'll get into that in a second. But also, the other half of this is that they're not getting promotions, and they're not getting nearly the same pay or treatment. There's all sorts of crazy sex discrimination cases going on, and so now we're trying to figure out if it's a big enough case to go to the Supreme Court and make it a class action lawsuit. So we're going to talk about it tonight. We got some articles here to back us up, but I'm sure we already have enough opinions to go around. So who wants to start? We all just took a big breath. Come on. All right. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Here we go.
You're hosting this shindig.
Okay.
Start it off.
All right. Fine. Admittedly, it was my idea. I'm sure that shocks all of you transitioners. But what I can't believe after reading these articles is the fact that I understand that Walmart is a huge corporation and that they're trying to group a lot of individual cases all together. But, you know, I think that somebody should be able to take a huge corporation down. It's called justice. And, you know, why we're still having these same issues? Well, let's confront it all at once. You know, let's deal with it instead of, you know, they're saying in this article that individuals, when they go up against Walmart, obviously aren't going to get anywhere. So maybe this is the only way that people can be heard. And this is an issue that reminds me of the civil rights movement. Like, we've come so far. Why are men and women not making the same thing? That's my question. And if we can solve it through this case, why would we not want to go forward with it? I don't understand the big holdup and the...
Because men have a lot of money and they want to keep all of their money because women with money scare men with money.
Well,
that's basically what it is.
You know, I mean, I agree with you, but I mean, I don't think that's for all men, you know? And I think that, you know, somebody should come to their senses here and realize that you know, women with money, they need to support families. That's basically what's coming out in the news, you know, not even just with Walmart specifically, but in the workforce, a lot of jobs with the unemployment rates rising have gone to men, like statistically. And that's because, what do you mean stagnated?
The unemployment rate is stagnated.
Okay, let's, Dan, you want to, oh, Pat, you want to cut in?
I'm going to work off a little bit what Janine had just said with not just Walmart, but women in the general workplace. One of the big things with this Walmart class action is it's not only is it just Walmart, but there is a lot of people waiting in the wings to see what happens here. Because if this goes, because whether or not this goes through will also decide whether or not there will be more class actions against other companies like Walmart, where this is for some reason still a problem. So whatever the Supreme Court says here, it's not just going to affect the people at Walmart and all those people. It's going to affect people countrywide.
It's going to be a precedent.
Yes.
Yeah.
People are going to reference this case if it ever gets to that point.
I mean, I really hope it does. I think it's obviously a worthwhile, you know, case. It should make history. It's time. It's time for people to wake up and realize that men and women are equal. And that's all anyone is asking for. No, I'm better than you. You're better than me type thing. Dan Schmidt?
Let me come in here from a legal standpoint.
Okay.
Now, obviously, if people are getting discriminated against, that's clearly against the law, and something needs to be done about that. I mean, it's written in the books. However, bringing a lawsuit such as this is not likely to accomplish what you hope to accomplish, because what you are doing is you are saying by a class action lawsuit that all women at Walmart are being discriminated against. There are 544 women in managerial roles in Walmart. What this lawsuit is saying is basically that not only are these women the victims, but they're also the perpetrators. How can that be? You can't group all women of Walmart mm-hmm. into a single class if all of them aren't being discriminated against.
I agree with you, and I it makes perfect sense. But the thing is, I feel like if there was just some way that the women, even if they are being treated fairly, if there's women of Walmart who are being treated fairly, they have to at least hear some of the things that the managers have said to the women who aren't being treated fairly and get behind them. And like maybe that's a way that this, you know, can happen and can be labeled as a class action. Like, do you know that quote? There's a couple quotes of things that managers had said to women.
Yeah, one of the things I saw when I was reading in the Huffington Post was Al Norman's article that listed a couple of specifics, and even one of them was a quote that a manager had said to, I guess it was this woman who is kind of getting the ball rolling on this, and he had said to her to brush the cobwebs off of her makeup and doll up a little bit if she wants to advance. And that's just something that makes every girl like, make a fist and grit her teeth, because it's just so frustrating. And I can understand how she felt that way. And also saying that these lawsuits have been kind of brewing for about 10 years against Walmart.
But is that a fault of Walmart, or is that a fault of
just
some
random
guy?
That seems like this seems like a bunch of individual cases that they're trying to punch lump and group together in order to have a more viable.
Well, I don't doubt that, but I also don't see how one individual can take on a big corporation. Big corporations need something big in order to fight them. So I don't mind that class action lawsuit being bundled together. What I'm asking is it actually money, like, is Walmart actually responsible monetarily wise for these people getting discriminated, or do they just need to kind of like clean house, quote unquote?
Yeah, another thing that I had read was that some people are kind of saying that Walmart is just like it's just a big company, like a father knows nothing. And they say, we used to call such a portrayal corporate deniability. And the managers do their own thing. You cannot control what a manager does. It may be bad because they have that name on their badge, but it's the manager saying something. It's not to say that the entire corporation is bad.
Because like Dan said, there's 554 women promoted. Maybe those were just like the lucky ones, and it's coming out wrong, but maybe those are the ones where the managers just aren't total, you know.
The ones who slept with supervisors?
Buttumps.
Another way to get ahead?
Yeah. Or just, like, you know, the guys, those are the managers who aren't bad.
Right.
Or sexist or discriminatory or anything like that. So maybe you need to file, maybe you do need to do it on a one-by-one basis, like this manager did this manager did that. But in order for, you know, people to wake up to the problem, I can see why they want to group everybody together.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know enough about legal jargon to know what they would do. There seems to be no middle ground between a class action suit and then doing the individual cases. And they keep saying that there's inconsistencies,
there would be problems with both.
Yeah.
I mean, creating a class action lawsuit like we were talking about, you're not likely to have the Supreme – what this is doing before the Supreme Court is they're not ruling whether Walmart – it was guilty of discriminating or anything like that. What they are ruling is that if this can be classified as a class action lawsuit, yeah, if this group of women that has been discriminated against can be quantified as a class. But then again, mm-hmm, if you take it down to an individual standpoint, yeah, it's a lot harder to get that kind of case through. That'll sit in a courtroom for a decade. That'll
Walmart
clog
has
things
enough
up
money to
just hold it off.
You know,
and
appeal,
hold it off.
appeal.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, like I said before, hope that it does go through. I mean, whether it's right to kind of group everyone into the same category, even if that, you know, same discrimination isn't happening to everyone, I think that this is a time when a group of people who are the underdogs, just like in anything, in sports and in anything in life, can come together and make a difference and make history. I don't know. I feel like it's our time, you know. There's a lot of changes in the world going on right now, and this is the opportunity to make a positive one. And there's all this hemming and hawing, but I really do just think people may be just afraid of change, and like, this is not right. Like, what's going on isn't right. Like, I understand, you know, what you're saying, Dan, that, you know, it's about, as far as going to Supreme Court, it's just about if it can be a class action, not whether, you know,
they'll be sending it back to the lower courts.
Right. I just hope that whatever it is, you know, these women are given more promotion opportunities, and that Walmart has to take a hard look, like kind of clean house, at, you know, their management policies. Like, this just can't keep going the way it is. Something has to change, and maybe, you know, the bigger, the better. Whether that's realistic or not, we'll see. But
the risk with that is then now you could get discrimination towards men, since they're so like hypersensitive to it that they'll only promote women.
But and then it wouldn't even stop there. I mean,
this is a slippery slope we're traveling.
What if you feel discriminated against because you're Hindu and they don't let you have off for Ramadan? Mm-hmm. Isn't that, you know, you could claim that as discrimination? You could start. A snowball could really start rolling on this. And another thing, by attacking the corporation as itself, is we're talking about setting a precedent. I mean, this opens up the door to go after pretty much every retailer.
For every reason.
If you look at the difference between pay in men and women, women earn on average in the workforce 75% of what men earn. And that's across the board. If you look at the numbers, Walmart is actually above the United States average as far as discrepancies between paying men and women. I mean, if you're going to go after Walmart, Costco's next, and it goes right on down the line.
Well, Walmart's like the biggest employer in this country, too.
Well, if you want to make an impact, you go after the big dog.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, somebody has to be made an example of. So I think Walmart, you know, I mean, Walmart has had so many things, like looking, just researching it on Google, you type it in, just so much stuff comes up. And granted, they are a large corporation, so it's kind of hard to monitor. But that doesn't mean that they should get away with it. And, you know, as far as like everyone being attacked, like if this goes through and happens and everyone's saying, oh, well, I was discriminated against, I think the main thing with this is that it's not for vacation time. It's for pay. Like that, it's to support yourself, you know, not just your families, even if you're single. It's to support yourself, to make a living. And to have that same right to have make a living, like, that's a big thing. And, you know, I don't think everything that everyone's going to bring forward will go to court. Like, I mean, yes, there's always that fear that if you, you know, make this change that everyone's going to be like, oh, well, I was this and I was that. But, you know, to sue someone takes a lot of effort and a lot of time. So I don't know. I'm kind of skeptical about that.
Lawyers got nothing but time.
True.
I just am wondering, I mean, I cannot imagine that Walmart would ever lose because they are the big corporation that's kind of running America. But say, if they did lose, do you think that their stores would, like some of their stores would close down, that they would really lose that much money? Or do you think it'd be like this one big chunk out of their pocket to pay these women and then things would just go right back to normal? Do you really think it would make a difference?
Nope.
No. I don't think it would make a difference, but it would make things right. Like, do you know what I mean? All they need to... My mom's clapping. You can tell who raised me. And I'm proud of it. Word, Mom. But, no, you know, I don't think it will be any skin off their back, you know? So, Walmart, do the right thing, okay? That has been our Walmart roundtable. Oh, Dan Schmidt has closing comments.
Well, a prediction.
Prediction.
I think their best bet is to fight this back out in the lower courts because... If I were to make a prediction right now, mm-hmm. I don't think the Supreme Court's going to let them fall through with this class action suit. I don't think they're going to rule that what this group of women constitutes enough to call themselves a class, considering that there are an entire, you know, I don't know how many women Walmart employs. I don't know how many you're suing, but I assume that there are a good number that are not suing for discrimination. So you can't have that be a class if some are getting treated fairly and some are not. I just don't see how the Supreme Court is going to rule that as a class action lawsuit. I think they're going to have to take this back to the lower courts and deal with it on a case-by-case basis.
Well, no matter, you know, what, you know, if it goes to the Supreme Court or the lower courts, I hope something positive can come out of it. And, you know, for all the women who were discriminated against, you know.
Allegedly,
we feel you, and don't worry about wearing makeup to work, okay? If it's a rainy day out and I don't feel like wearing makeup, I don't. And you know what? You deserve the same pay. So just keep holding your heads up high, and we will continue to update you on this matter, I'm sure. So, woof, that was intense. I love that when it gets intense. Yay, let's clap. That always lightens things up.
Yeah. All right. Very intense roundtable. Mm-hmm. If you want to hear more about this roundtable, want to call me a chauvinist pig.
Or me a chauvinist pig.
Or Derek a chauvinist pig.
Or me a feminist. Feminist pig.
Feminist tree hugger.
Tree hugger, there we go.
You want to call me a chauvinist pig? You want to call Janine a feminist tree hugger?
Do it
on Twitter. Check us out on Twitter. Transitions R. Leave us a message on Facebook at Transitions Radio. Or go to our website at transitionsradio.com.
And you can hear it on Cabrini College's radio station, 89.1 WYBF FM, The Burn, from 4 to 5 p.m., and that's Fridays.
Okay, so I don't normally do this, but I am going to jump here and actually run a segment. For those of you who don't know me...
Give it up!
Apparently giving it up is for me. So in honor of April Fool's Day, and since apparently I'm the biggest prankster here, we are going to talk about the best, the worst, and the most embarrassing prank. And whoever can win me over, if you can beat a story of mine, I will buy you a soda or a coffee, whatever you like.
It's on.
All right, so we will start with...
Can't handle it.
We will start with the best. I'll play cleanup because I know I have good stories. So we'll start with Noelle. What's your... best that you've ever heard or been a part of?
All right. Well, I mean, I haven't pulled so many practical jokes myself. And this actually is not an April Fool's Day joke, but it is something that for some reason I always find.
Anything you want.
This is something I've always found humorous. Now, my sister Amber, years ago, she shared a big apartment with a bunch of different people. And one of the guys' names was Dave. And Dave, for some reason, he's a great guy. He's in the army. And he made a mold of a certain part of his body. And kept it on his bookshelf. And so when my sister and her boyfriend, who's now her husband, would come over, he would throw it around the room and hit my sister's boyfriend with
it. Wait, like, was it hard?
Yes, it was.
Like clay, or was it like jello?
Or flaccid.
It was like a I think it was like a plastic, or not like a plastic, but like a sculpture kind of.
Okay.
Like a clay. Not clay, my God. But you know what I mean? So he's throwing it around the room. And because guys apparently think this is funny.
It's hilarious and so far.
It's universal.
And so he's throwing it around the room and he hits my sister's boyfriend on the head with it. My sister's boyfriend's like scarred. And my sister says, "Dave, if you do that to me, I'm breaking it." And I don't mean the statue.
Ooh.
I always enjoy that story.
All right. Janine, what's yours?
Oh, man. I don't really play pranks on people because I'm a good person.
You can be.
No, I'm just kidding. Wait, but like I get where I was going with that is I get a lot of pranks pulled on me.
Bump.
Yeah. I'm very gullible.
Okay,
you know?
So what's the best prank pulled on you?
There's too many, but since Patrick McGowan is in our, was a guest in our midst. Yes. The greatness of Patrick McGowan. Freshman year of college, you know, Pat and I had just met. I don't know who he thought he was, but he always tried playing pranks on me. And one day, my whole group of friends actually, and it was April Fool's Day, decided to get together and tell me that Pat had landed himself in the Big Slammer. Yes, that's right. Jail. And, you know, it's like 8 o'clock and it's like late at night. And I get a knock on my door, and it's my friend Matt Leach. And he's like, "Hey, Gene, you'll never guess what happened." And he wasn't a very good actor, but me being gullible was like, "What?" And he's like, "Pat's in jail." And I'm like, "What? How could Pat be in jail?" And he's like, "Well, we were at the mall and at a video store, I guess GameStop."
What happened was, I'll jump in here
off.
And tell the story.
You cut my story. This is what always happens. It's okay.
Well, pretty much what happened was I had gone to the mall to return something and they wouldn't take it back. So I was kind of frustrated, but I was like, "Oh, okay." And as we were walking back to the bus to go back to Cabrini, Matt's like, "You know, what would have been really funny is if you had flipped out, thrown stuff around and all that." And from there, we went, "Hey, that would be a great April Fool's joke. Let's tell someone that happened." "I know. Let's tell Janine."
Why me? Never mind. I'm not even going to ask. Continue.
So then, of course, Matt went to Janine's room and told her, "Well, yeah, Janine, Pat's kind of in jail now because..."
Like, what am I supposed to do about it, too? That was the thing. I was like, "Oh, my God, well..." And, like, then I was trying to solve it, but then...
Man, you are gullible.
I thought my friend was in jail. I'm like, "Well, do they think I have bail money? Because I certainly don't, you know? It's not like I was, you know, I was in college." But, so I had remembered, though, that my friend kind of ruined it. Well, our friend who wrote the screenplay for Requiem, Delta, she called me, and I don't remember how she gave it away, but she kind of was hinted at the fact that you were you with her then, like on the bus together?
I might have been.
And she's like, "Pat..." And she stopped, and I was like, "What?" And then she's like, "Never mind, I gotta go." And she hung up on me. And so when Pat was when Matt was telling me the story later on, I was like, "Wait a minute." And I was just starting to figure it out. And then I guess everybody came in and was like, "April Fools. Ah, ha, ha. So funny."
That's not really like devastating, though.
No, it wasn't devastating. No,
has anyone ever caused like actual monetary damage?
One part that we tried to sell it with was me calling her from jail.
Oh, God, now I remember that.
And, of course, while I was doing it, being the great practical joker I am, I was cracking up in the middle of it.
You sounded like you were crying, Pat.
Which supposedly sounded like I was crying.
I'm just kidding. I don't remember. Kind
of all right, well, to wrap this up and to prove that I am the best prank master.
Oh, wait, Dan.
Oh, Dan.
Dan.
Dan, I will let you go. And then I will tell everyone why I'm the best prank master.
All right, time to hit the home run here. Now, you know, in high school,
24-ounce soda on the line, buddy. No pressure.
I'm like Tom Brady, dude. I do the best under pressure.
Wait, didn't win?
Not yet.
Not yet.
We didn't hear everyone's
story. I mean, you know, in high school, I did, you know, your standard pranks, your air horns in the auditorium, you know, your convincing your one friend that you signed him up for the Army and he deploys in 6 weeks. You know, basic throwing peanuts on the no peanuts table.
Just your
stealing exit signs, your basic stuff. But one memorable one was we would always, you know, when you get bored in class, we had block scheduling, hour and a half long. You get bored, so you go to the bathroom. You have no intention of going to the bathroom. You just want to wander around for 15 minutes. So me and my two friends, who will remain nameless in this story to protect the guilty parties, we would always meet up by this one bathroom by the gym and just, you know, shoot the crap and do whatever. And we go in the bathroom one time, and one friend's washing his hands, and he notices that the sink attached to the wall, it's a little shaky. So he looks at me, and he looks at his other friend, and he says, "Stand guard." So we go outside, make sure no one is coming. He climbs up on top of the sink and starts jumping. And starts jumping. And starts jumping. And we just hear crack! And then a four-letter expletive. And we rush into the bathroom to see water pouring out the wall, drenching him from pretty much head to toe. The water starts pouring out into the hallway, into the gymnasium. We just look at each other, and the only thing we could think of to do was run.
It's the only thing you can do.
So I ran back to class with, you know, slop, 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 my shoes on the tile floor. My friend was soaked. He just cut class and went home. He's like, "If I go back, I'm done, so I'm just going home." And my other friend made it back to class. Never, ever pinned it on us.
That's amazing.
Never.
I might have some contention for my 24-ounce.
And if anyone at the administration of CBEES is listening to this, that was a parody.
It was all a fictitious story.
Fictitious story.
Okay, well, I apparently am the prank master, and to kind of further my point, and just to make it real quick, in the Phillipsburg Mall, not to name malls, or implicit myself, a mall in Phillipsburg, let's say, I let loose 60 anoles, the little green lizards. I let them out in a pet store, and this pet store let other pets in. And when these other pets saw these pets that I released, pretty much everything just went banana sandwich, and I caused probably close to $2,000 worth of damage. But we've gone over time, so can we get a vote on who wins? I think I'm going to have to go with Dan. I didn't realize...
Dan, you had a good one. Tell us some more. You were telling us some interesting ones before, guys.
Yeah, we were telling you all the ones
that we can't say on the radio.
Oh, rats. Well, yeah,
the
I guess
that involve bodily parts.
Oh, okay, so we gotta go. But yeah, I vote Dan. I vote Dan. Someone else. Wow. But
I like Mountain Dew.
So if anyone else has a prank that they think can top D-Tech, Stan's, and even mine. You probably can top mine, but that's okay. If you have a prank that you think is the ultimate prank, please do send us an email. All of our email addresses are on transitionsradio.com, jgibbons@transitionsradio.com, for example.
Well, since I was kind of the maitre d' of this little segment here, hopefully I might have more. I don't know. We'll see. But we're going to send it back. Thanks for telling your pranks, guys, and we'll send it back to Dan and Janine.
All right, Janine, I got off work tomorrow. What's on tap this weekend?
Well, Dan Schmidt, that is a very good question. And actually, instead of what's on tap, I'm changing it because I like to change my mind because I'm a woman.
She's a woman.
Yes.
I wasn't informed of these changes.
I wasn't informed she was a woman.
Well, that's because tonight's Spur of the Week, April Fool's Day edition of Transition. So instead of what's on tap, I'm making it what's up for grabs because there's just a lot out there that I just want to go out and literally grab.
Sounds fancy.
It does, doesn't it? So, you know, I'm basically talking everything, music, movies, and more. You know, first things first, let's get out the big news. Britney Spears came out with her new album. It was released in stores this Tuesday. It's
Oh my God.
I'm so excited. It's called Femme Fatale, which is an awesome name. I totally approve. And if you want any more information about that, if you'd like more information, please visit www.britneyspears.com. She's also going to have a big special on MTV this Sunday. So make sure to check that out, too. So, and my personal movie theater pick this weekend is actually, well, I'm going to see a couple movies. I'm going to see Jane Eyre, which is coming out in select theaters. I'm going to see that the Ambler Theater. So, but I also have Sucker Punch here. So that's my personal pick. Yeah, it looks really good. The special effects look amazing. And then just one more note to close it on. In movies, the DVD of Black Swan was released on Monday, March 28th, which is like now my favorite movie, even though it's really kind of dark. So definitely go out there and buy that. It won Oscars for everything. Natalie Portman won for Best Actress. So And if you want exclusive information, I mean way more information than I gave you on this segment, please check out my blog on transitionsradio.com on the What's on Tap page for my Elizabeth Taylor tribute. So I'm Jean Gibbons, your arts and entertainment contributor, and that's what's up for grabs this weekend. Back to you, Dan.
All right. Well, thanks, Janine, for giving us the dealio for this weekend. Well, I guess that wraps it up for this edition of Transitions.
We are finito.
That it does.
Unusual edition.
Well, Dan, thanks for being my guest co-host this week. And
I go where I'm needed.
And next week, Callie and John will be back from their secret assignment.
Well, in for John Mim, I'm Dan Schmidt.
And I'm Janine Gibbons, and for Callie McCurdy.
And I'm Derek.
And thanks. Well. And thanks for listening to
Transition.
Wait, I wasn't ready.
Oh, guys.
Without John and Callie, this show goes awry.
Oh, come back. See you all next week.
Bye.